Time right now is 8:30. Good Thursday morning. Welcome to the WLBB Community Voice program here on News Talk 1330 FM 106.3. Also streaming live online at newstalk1330.com. And I am your host, Colin Worthington. We're continuing our Meet the Candidates series. We've got about five or six contested races in Carroll County. We're going to try and cover those for the municipal election coming up in November. We're going to try and cover those a lot of those during the Community Voice programs during the month of October. This morning, we're talking about the Ward 2 City Council race for the city of Carrollton. My guest this morning is Dr. Brent Harris. He describes himself as a physician, investor, mechanic, and inventor. I got that off your LinkedIn page.
Oh, nice.
So I hope that's accurate. I guess, first of all, give me a basic intro. Tell us about yourself. Tell us about your family. For those who haven't seen or heard from Brent Harris in the last 2 years, there's six people, please.
Good morning, Carrollton. Dr. Brent Harris. So I was born in Rapid City, South Dakota. My dad was in the military, flew B-52 nuclear bombs during the Cold War, and so it's pretty cool. And then moved to California, and then Washington State, and then moved to Georgia at about age six in the mid-80s. And so I've been in Georgia most of my life. Grew up, went to Berry College up in Rome, and then down to Mercer Medical School down in Macon and Savannah. And then my wife and I moved out to Texas for 4 years at the University of Texas Health Science Center in San Antonio. And then we came back to Carrollton. Carrollton's a good location. It's about 45 minutes from both of our families. So it's pretty close to, you know, my parents and her parents. And then Tanner gave us really good employment opportunities, you know, kind of enticed us to come into the area, which was nice. Joined Professional Park Medical Services with Dr. Taylor Gordon and Chuck Davis and Greg Floyd and that group, and a great group of guys and women in that group. And soon after, decided to start a direct pay medical clinic, U.S. Med Clinic here in Carrollton, kind of getting out of the insurance world. Had a lot of patients that were complaining about, you know, pricing and affordability and access without insurance, and had a lot of friends that were small business owners. And so decided to start that direct pay clinic. It's kind of blossomed, and basically said I wanted to reinvest everything back into my local community. And that's kind of what my wife and I have done. Started a variety of businesses and investments in the area, and, you know, real estate improvements, et cetera, et cetera. And I think politically getting involved, I think everybody should get involved politically at some point in their life. I'm always off and on. They say I'm a, you know, somewhat of an active political guy, and, you know, I've been running a couple times now. If nothing else, I think that bringing additional opinions and ideas to the table in our political world is a good thing. I think if we're stagnant in specific ideas, it's not a good thing for the growth and variety and things that we need to happen in society to make it work.
Okay, I hope you didn't answer all of my other questions with that statement. But you did mention that, you know, being active politically, you did run for the same seat 2 years ago, 2.5 mm-hmm. years ago. Roy yeah. Wojcik was the Ward 2 city council person.
I think it was pretty close. I don't remember the exact
I probably should have checked, yeah.
But percentages.
You lost to Brett Ledbetter, who mm-hmm. is the incumbent right now, and he's on the ballot this year, and you're mm-hmm. challenging him again. Let me go over this here. This, in the last couple of years, he received attention locally after you spoke out against the Bankhead Highway Road Project. Mm-hmm. I think that's the first time that we really got that we heard from Brett Harris. Challenging City Hall regarding the snow cone property and the color scheme. Mm-hmm. Saw some outrage from some when you announced that you were considering a business project in the former building of the former the Carver High School. Mm-hmm. You also announced that you were considering a run for governor. And in July of this year, you were charged with 5 counts of computer crimes pertaining to computer invasion of privacy, 1 count of knowingly and intentionally failing to submit prescription information to Georgia Drugs and Narcotics. Now, on the other side, you have a large group of people, and I'm not overstating that, a large group of people who support you and your willingness to speak out against perceived wrongs, saying that they believe you have the best interest in the community through your business and other proposed projects. And I've heard from several people who do credit you and your clinic and your proposed treatments for saving their life during the COVID pandemic. And it's not just, you know, made me feel better. Or they say that, you know, he saved my life. I mean, I've heard that phrase from several people. Do you see yourself as a controversial figure?
No, I think there's definitely a lot of controversy around me and my opinions. And I think the status quo in society is for most people not to say anything and to go through their 9-to-5 and, you know, get along to go along. And a lot of that has to do with people have a lot to lose, right? So from an employment standpoint, if you're an employee of a corporation and that corporation is dealing, has financial interests with another corporation in town or with a big, you know, system or bureaucracy in town, you know, if they speak out, they're likely to lose their job or to get reprimanded or, you know, not pushed up in the promotion. So, I mean, I think there's few people in today's society, just the way it's structured, that really can kind of step out of the box and give an unbiased opinion or their personal opinion without significant repercussions. Well, and I say that, and even me, maybe there's a lot of significant repercussions for speaking my mind.
And, you know, along those lines, does that make it difficult to get anything accomplished if you're an elected official? You know, when you're working with other elected officials, you know, when you're speaking out your mind and it may be, you know, rubbing some people the wrong way on city council, does that make it harder for you to accomplish anything you want to accomplish?
Well, I think so. I had a similar type of thing in residency where I spoke out when I saw issues that were occurring, and a lot of people didn't appreciate it at the time, right? Rub some people the wrong way. But then years into it, they actually voted me in as president the entire residency. So the entire Utesca residency system of 800 and some physicians, I was basically the president and sat on the board with the hospital. So I was the only resident physician on the entire board system for that.
Yeah, sorry, I was trying to make sure your audio level was fine.
And so, I mean, I think I, you know, brought a lot to that table, sitting at that table. And I think on the city council, having an independent outside opinion would bring a lot of value to it. I see the world a little bit differently as a physician, with people's, you know, medical interests as my number one priority. I mean, take the Bankhead issue for instance. I mean, I never said that the Bankhead project wouldn't look good. I always thought it would look good. I mean, you could argue, was it worth it the money wise, but my biggest contention against it really was a safety issue from a patient standpoint. So it was emergency medical services. And so now we can talk about COVID, right? So if a COVID patient, you know, has an oxygen in the 50s and they're at the end of the Bankhead corridor and it's jam packed full of, you know, traffic, and the tank on the EMS truck runs out of oxygen, you know, that patient might die. You know, and the minute difference in transport time may not sound like much, but to a stroke patient, it may be the difference between them getting TPA and getting in that blood clot eliminated and them to regain 100% function. To the heart attack patient, that couple minutes difference in transport time may be the difference between them getting into the cath lab early enough to get, you know, 95% salvage on their heart compared to 75%. And so I think that the EMS transport study was an integral part that should have been done, but it wasn't.
But now that we're 2 years into that, do you still feel like that could be an issue for that?
Well, I think if you expanded it all the way down, like if you narrowed it all the way through, all the way to the bypass, I definitely think the issue would magnify. So the transport from an emergency medical transport standpoint would intensify and increase if you basically tripled the length of that narrowing. And so, I mean, they did the study on each light, and each light had, you know, 30-second or something delay, increase in delay, which doesn't sound like much, but you start adding, you know, half dozen or dozen lights together and, you know, miles of road instead of 0.8 miles, it starts becoming additive and the issue becomes larger.
Concern for effect on business was something that you pointed out as well. I mean, mm-hmm. It might deter people from driving down Bankhead Highway, so less traffic, less mm-hmm. opportunity for people to see something and decide they want to go in there.
Have
you? And you are a business owner at the end of that road, right at the end of Bankhead and Cedar.
I mean, I'm a heavy investor on Bankhead, on the entire corridor there. I mean, I've poured a ton of money into the Bankhead corridor. I mean, I think anybody that drives down that corridor can kind of see our influence along it. You know, that being said, I did have, you know, one person that I know of that ran a little wireless company. He went out of business because of the Bankhead narrowing project.
Well, you think that's the reason? Are you?
That's what he said.
Yeah.
I mean, I just can assume. He said his business completely dried up. But I mean, I think overall, I think the Bankhead corridor was scheduled for kind of a cyclical renovation over there, anyways, just based on the property dilapidation that's occurred over the last, you know, 40-50 years. And so it's kind of time to cycle that entire, you know, arterial corridor anyways. I mean, you can see the fast food restaurants are rebuilding over there and renovating. You know, Burger King's coming in, they're rebuilding a brand new Burger King. You know, the other fast food restaurants renovated over there. Subway renovated. I mean, so you can just go down the list and see the renovations that have occurred over there.
Now, I did mention the arrest happened in July, and it's not often that somebody with a recent arrest, and make sure I'm not saying it's a conviction. It's not a conviction. But what can you say about that?
I've been kind of told not to say any specifics about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there are not accurate statements on both the warrants, and so I plan on being vindicated from a criminal legal standpoint.
So, I mean, I would say you believe you're not guilty of the allegations, just or you wouldn't be running, I would think.
Correct.
Okay. Before we take our first break, would you define Ward 2 for me, just so people listening, if they know that, I mean, you know, sometimes there are people. I mean, I'm sure there's 20% of the people don't realize what ward they're in.
And, yeah, I could pull up the little
need to know if the, you know, if you are their potential candidate.
Yeah, Ward 2 map. I mean, it kind of runs. You know, if you look out Bankhead Highway from the downtown area, it's the entire area north of that, around the bypass, over towards 27. So pretty much the entire northern quadrant of the city around the Lake Carroll area. And then it extends up. If you go up 27 and go out west a little bit, there's a couple little pieces out there past the Cadillac dealership and all that.
All right. Our guest this morning is the challenger for the Ward 2 seat on Carrollton City Council. His name is Dr. Brent Harris, and he's challenging Brett Ledbetter, who is the incumbent. Early voting is going on this week. It's today, tomorrow. It's at the Carrollton, at the elections office in Carrollton. Today and tomorrow from 8 o'clock until 5 o'clock, but also open on Saturday from 9 till 5. This is the first week of early voting. Early voting continues next week and the week after. And I think the third week, and that would be October 25th through the 29th, early voting will take place at the Powell Park Arts Center in Villarrica for those of you voting in those races. Again, my guest this morning, Dr. Brent Harris, will come back and continue our conversation. Community Voice brought to you by Tanner Health System and Oak Mountain Academy on News Talk 1330 FM 106.3.
Health is a journey. It's making better choices, even when it's not easy. It's taking care of yourself and the people you love. At Tanner Health System, we're there for you with every step, with primary care, heart care, cancer care, women's care, orthopedics, surgical services, and so much more. We're dedicated to helping you live and feel your best. So let's get on that journey to health. You've got places to be for many years to come. Find us at Tanner.org.
At Oak Mountain Academy, our academic excellence shines through innovation and a personalized educational experience. Our pre-K 3 through 12th grade environment offers a family-oriented atmosphere. We are an independent school with faith-based values and an academy honor code. Our academic standards prepare our students for college and beyond. I'm Patrick Duran, headmaster, inviting you to visit us on the mountain or at oakmountain.us. Come see how our warriors are creating legacies.
Welcome back to the WLBB Community Voice. Time right now is 8:44. I'm your host, Colin Worthington. My guest this morning, Dr. Brent Harris. He is a candidate challenging the incumbent for the Ward 2 City Council seat in the city of Carrollton. I'm going to try and run through a bunch of questions here in the final 15 minutes here. So what are your he did kind of allude to that, so I'll skip that conversation as far as, you know, your primary goals this time around. Do you have any issues with the votes of the incumbent over the last 2 years? Anything that you would have gone different route in?
No, I mean, I think, and I've spoke to Brett Ledbetter before. I've had ate breakfast with him next to him up at Jerry's. I mean, seems like a nice guy. I don't know him very well, but I don't have any particular problems with what the job he's doing.
I was checking out your Facebook page. You have a candidacy Facebook page and a personal Facebook page. One of the things you mentioned is eliminating open interpretation of our laws. Talk on that a little bit, please.
Yeah, I think generally speaking, it's kind of a global issue. I think our laws, ordinances have become a little bit too vague and a little bit too prosperous, meaning there's too many of them. And for the average person that, you know, was walking their average day-to-day life in the city of Carrollton, there may be ordinances and issues that they don't even know exist that they may be, you know, failing on, you know, and they could potentially get, you know, prosecuted for it and brought to the municipal court over it. And so I think just from a simplicity standpoint and a equitable standpoint, I think, you know, the law should be very succinct, well written, and any vagueness should be eliminated from them.
You talk about the vagueness. Is it like using words like may and shall and can?
Well, that, and just if there's a statement that's open to interpretation, right? I just don't think that's, from a constitutional standpoint, we should be writing rules and regulations that aren't very succinct and easily understood for the average, you know, 12 year old, you know.
Now, this could be related to you. I think you should have an opinion on this. When you're deciding whether or not to approve a rezoning, when is it okay to tell somebody what they can and cannot do with their property?
Yeah, I think the rezoning is an interesting topic, and we see it actually that occurs in the city governments across the state, where one landowner will have one, you know, project in mind, and they come to get it rezoned and they present it in front of the board or in the city council and they turn them down, okay? And then 3 months, 6 months later, the exact same or very similar type project and the same essential use of that property comes back for the same vote, and lo and behold, it gets passed. And you're like, how the heck does that happen? You know, where's one group that wants to invest in a property to do something, and then the next group comes along, it gets that same exact property or an identical property, and they are able to get it passed. And a lot of it has to do with probably, you know, some political dealing that occurs in the back end somewhere. So I think a lot of times the rezonings, we should really simplify, the global plan for the city, and it's just kind of really cut in stone. Hey, this is what it is. If it's in within the corridor for, you know, say you have a residential house inside of a business corridor. Let's just take a Bankhead corridor, for instance, right? And there's a property along the Bankhead corridor that is currently zoned residential, and somebody buys that residential house. My opinion, it should just be a rubber stamp issue that says, hey, I want to start a business in here. It needs to be zoned commercial. Okay, well, it's currently a residential property inside of a commercial district. It's like a rubber stamp. Boom, boom, it's done.
But future land use maps, I mean, should we stick by those? I mean,
I think all that type of stuff is open to discussion. And I think a lot of that issues, I think we elect people to get in there to discuss the pros and cons of land use and development and make decisions. And so that's where I think I would bring some value to, where I see it from both sides, right? I can see it from the patient side. I can see it from the residential side as a, you know, person that lives here in Carrollton, but I can also see it from a developer and business owner standpoint, where, okay, we need business expansion. We need development to occur in order to keep our economy, you know, afloat and doing well.
City of Carrollton has not changed the millage rate in at least a decade, at least 10 years. Yet, when property values do go up, the city does collect additional property taxes from property owners. Mm-hmm. Now, what process would you work through to determine a millage rate increase, or maintaining it, or rolling it back?
Yeah, I think it's totally unfortunate that what occurs is the elected officials can basically say that, hey, we haven't had a property tax increase, where in the situation where they double the value of a property and they keep the same millage rate, well, that's essentially a doubling of a taxation, you know, in my mathematics, you know. So I would actually do a standard. So what's the average appraised value across the board of, you know, per acre or however you want to set it up, the standard appraisal value, and multiply that by the millage rate and come up with a figure and keep that figure and use that figure to analyze, okay, do we need to roll back taxes? Do we need to decrease the millage rate? Do we need to increase the millage rate? Overall, I would be a much more of a proponent of decreasing millage rates and decreasing taxation on property owners. I think as a government as a whole, we get into the unfortunate situation of just spending and really not controlling the spending. At the end of the day, someone has to work hard to generate that revenue and money in order to pay those taxes. And I think, you know, if you go around and drive through most of the cities, especially like the smaller, you know, suburban and urban type cities through Georgia, if you look at the buildings, the commercial buildings in the cities, usually the fanciest and nicest buildings in the towns are the local government buildings, generally speaking.
Time right now is 8:50. We're going to take our final break and continue our conversation with Dr. Brent Harris, candidate for Ward 2 City Council in Carrollton. We'll come back with about 9 minutes. Community Voice brought to you by Tanner Health System, Oak Mountain Academy on News Talk 1330, FM 106.3.
Health is a journey. It's making better choices, even when it's not easy. It's taking care of yourself and the people you love. At Tanner Health System, we're there for you with every step, with primary care, heart care, cancer care, women's care, orthopedics, surgical services, and so much more. We're dedicated to helping you live and feel your best. So let's get on that journey to health. You've got places to be for many years to come. Find us at Tanner.org.
As a graduate of Oak Mountain Academy, I've found that my experience on the mountain prepared me beyond all expectations. As a junior at Auburn University, I approached my studies with great confidence thanks to what I learned at OMA. When I think back on my time on the mountain, I think of my teachers. Their genuine love and concern for me as a student was always evident. And now, as an adult, I still foster those relationships. I'm Carly Robinson, an Oak Mountain Academy alum. Visit oakmountain.us to see how you can offer your child an amazing opportunity to be a warrior.
Welcome back to the WLBB Community Voice here on News Talk 1330 FM 106.3. Also streaming live online at newstalk1330.com. And I hope with that new WLBB app, I mean, we're promoting the heck out of it. I hope it's working properly. At the conclusion of this program, if you missed any of it, it'll be up on our website at newstalk1330.com, so you can go back and listen to the entire program. My guest this morning is a candidate for Ward 2 City Council, Dr. Brent Harris. He's challenging, Dr. Brent Harris, I do it all the time, Brent Harris is challenging Brett Ledbetter for that Ward 2 City Council seat. Early voting is going on right now at the Carroll County Elections Office, continuing today and tomorrow from 8 o'clock till 5 o'clock, and then again on Saturday, 9 a.m. until 5 o'clock. Again, this is just the first week of early voting, so you still have 3 weeks ahead of the November 2nd election to where you'll be able to vote at your own regular polling place. You have some meet and greet events coming up, or at least one this weekend, right?
We have one Saturday morning at Bella Coffee out on Bankhead from 8 to 10. And so come on out and share your opinions, recommendations, any challenges, issues of, you know, contention, you know, the average citizen may have. And they don't necessarily have to be in my ward. I mean, anybody from Carrollton or their surrounding area, I think, can come.
You did have one already. Did you get... I mean, a lot of people show up and get a lot of feedback, a lot of questions concerns.
A handful of questions. I mean, there are a good handful of people that showed up. I think it was valuable. I mean, generally speaking, a city council district is relatively small, so there's not like, you know, hundreds of thousands of people to draw from. But yeah, it was a good event.
How do you feel about transportation options in Carrollton? I know we have the Carroll connection for Carroll County, and it does roll through. But I mean, does Carrollton need their own?
You mean like a public type public transportation? No, I don't think so. I don't think the cost benefit analysis is appropriate in a suburban market for public transportation.
If there was one thing in the zoning code, we did talk a little bit about the, you know, rezoning. If there's one thing in the code that you could change, what would that be?
Well, I don't think I have one particular thing that says, hey, this thing has to be changed. I do think one of the things for the one thing we could change from a standpoint of public spaces, I think the parks and public spaces, recreational facilities are really important for the family unit and keeping kids out of trouble and off of drugs and that thing, kind of thing. And I think especially for our lower income families, I think they're dissuaded from using certain facilities because of the cost. I mean, if you go over to even the public pool, you know, it costs money. You have to go in there to pay to use it. And I think that should be kind of free. Same with like the water park and, you know, any of the recreation type facilities. I think as taxpaying citizens, I mean, even people that are renting their homes are essentially paying part of the property tax, and, you know, they're part of the taxpaying base just like everybody else. And I think the, you know, even something what may seem cheap or affordable to one person may be significantly expensive to another. And so like just the water, you know, like the city pool over the rec department, it's like $250 for the year or something like that. It's a, I mean, that's a quarter grand. That's a lot of money.
Carrollton City Council and Mayor and Carrollton City officials are discussing what to do with COVID-19 relief rescue fund money. Carrollton allotted, I believe, a little more than $10 million, and they mm-hmm. should have $5 million initially this year, and I think the next five comes next year. But what are some suggestions of what to do that, with that money? Is there a way to find out to maybe get it back to some small businesses? Or
You know, I'd have to look and see what the stipulations from the federal government are. I'm sure there's some kind of stipulations for it. It may supposed to be used for, you know, air purification systems or, you know, sanitation. I mean, I have no idea. Maybe supposed to be used for businesses that have gotten really hit hard, like, you know, some of the restaurants in town. I'm not real sure. You'd have to look at the stipulations before I made a judgment call on that.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Brent Harris, our guest on this morning's Community Voice program. He is challenging the incumbent for the Ward 2 City Council seat here in Carrollton. And Election Day, again, is coming up November the 2nd. Is it important to involve residents in any kind of decision-making? And how would you go about that? I mean, everything. I mean, you know, is it better to be a strong person and, you know, stand on your own laurels and if you feel like you know something, you know, stick with that? Or is it more important for you to get input from the community, from your constituents?
Yeah, I think a lot of people look at me and they think I'm a pretty, you know, radicalized guy that says, okay, I think this is my opinion and I'm going to stick with it and grind to it to the end. But in reality, I usually like to listen to both sides of the opinion and then make a kind of a well-educated opinion on something. I think, you know, from a city council standpoint, you know, it's a little frustrating. You go up there and give in a, you know, a statement, citizen comment or whatever, and then you don't hear any feedback about that citizen comment. So if nothing else, I would like at least the response or the reply to those citizen comments posted somewhere or discussed on the next meeting, you know, after time, you know, the city council members have reviewed that citizen comment concern. And so that way, at least you get a two-way street on the communication. And I think that is much more important than just, you know, receiving information and then nothing happens. I mean, I think that's the general impression that people get. You know, hey, I have an opinion, but it's not valuable.
And you mentioned the citizen comments. There's been some changes to the city council meeting where those citizen comments, including that you have to live within the city of Carrollton or own a business in the city of Carrollton. How about those changes? How do you feel about that? I mean, and it's a limit to 3 minutes as well.
Right.
How do you feel about those?
No, I think that's appropriate to limit it to citizens inside the city and business owners within the city. I mean, I definitely think that's fair. As far as the time constraints, I mean, you'd have to get through the meeting at a certain point of time, and so I think that's appropriate. If the opinion or statement is longer than that, I think you should be able to submit maybe a written citizen comment in the place of it, and then you would still have to, you know, get a reply about it.
All right, you got 1 minute. You're knocking on doors in the neighborhood. I answer my door. I'm like, dude, I got a minute. I got to go. What are you telling me as far as considering you for that seat?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, my little card here, I'm thinking generally you're kind of voting for affordable health care, education reform, financial prosperity, pro-economy, pro-business development, low taxation, and equitable distribution of public dollars. So things like, you know, free access to public facilities, just like the library and water parks and all that kind of stuff. And I'd really look at all the expenditures in the city and make a really, try to get a really good, well-educated decision before I spent any of citizens' hard-earned money.
Dr. Brent Harris challenging the incumbent for the Ward 2 City Council seat, Brett Ledbetter. And Brett will be on the program on Monday on the Community Voice next Monday, beginning at 8:30. So thank you, sir, for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And we appreciate you listening to this morning's Community Voice. Again, this show in its entirety will be in a podcast form on our website at newstalk1330.com. Early voting continues today, tomorrow, and Saturday at the Carroll County Elections Office. Josh back in this seat tomorrow. I forgot who he's hosting, but he'll be here at 8:30. Community Voice brought to you by Tanner Health System and Oak Mountain Academy.